like to call the Environment, Energy, Natural Resource Committee to order. Members, before us today, we have House File 1097. The plan here, Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, if I may, please. Some of you have on your desk in front of you Outdoor Life published a list of the top 200 cities in the state of Minnesota for sportsmen to live. And in the top 25, there are two cities from Minnesota. One is actually from central Minnesota. My roommate, Mr. Hancock, represents the Bemidji area. And, of course, number 22, the highest city on the list in the state of Minnesota, is Roseau. So thank you for that point of personal privilege. Appreciate that. Northern Minnesota. And Representative Purcell as well is over there, too. So
That's good for us to all know, Representative Fabian.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. There are three towns from Minnesota on here, Representative Fabian.
I said top 25.
But you left out Rochester. I don't have any particular love for Rochester, but they are part of this great state, and they deserve recognition, too.
I agree with you totally. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson, Representative Fabian.
Moving right along.
Members, yes, before us today is going to be House File 1097. And any questions as far as the process? It's my hope this bill has a number of things that we've already passed. It has a few small bills in it, issues that were not previously before this committee. So we'll hear about those. There is a water issue that Representative Dill is working on. I believe may get further modified yet within the hour. It's upstairs being drafted. It's too much to change orally. The process will be, the hope is that we will wrap up in the next hour and 5 minutes. If we don't, we will move to another room and wrap up prior to 11:30. We need this bill processed today. It's going to be in Ways and Means tomorrow. With my hope, I made a commitment in this committee early on that this AIS issue needs to move forward, and it's my hope that it will be on the floor later this week. Question. All right, members, I'm going to move the Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe a question when we get in the bill, but I know the AIS you mentioned is in the delete all, and I know when the AIS left here, then it was changed in another committee, or there were some changes made. So is what is in here, is this as it was when it left here, or is this as it was after it was changed?
Representative Hansen, the AIS bill is as amended in Representative Westrom's committee. I believe Representative Draskowski and maybe one other member of this committee, maybe served on that committee, but it does include the changes that were made in that committee that dealt, I think, specifically with penalties. It rolls the penalties. There was not a doubling of the penalties in that change. Members, if there's no other procedural questions, why don't I get the bill before us, and we'll move the delete all, and then we can begin to discuss the bill. Members, I'd like to move House File 1097 to be passed and move to Ways and Means. And then I would like to move the DE-1-2, is that the way you see it here? The DE-1-2 amendment. Discussion to getting the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of the DE-1-2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, the amendment's adopted. I think what we'll do, members, how about Ms. Taylor? Would you be willing to walk through the bill? Are you ready? We did not discuss this. Would you be ready just to walk through and hit what is in the bill? And then we can take member questions and testimony and any amendments. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, would you like me to go through the delete all section by section, or sort of go through what bills are in here and the changes?
Ms. Taylor, why don't you just include what bills are in there and the changes,
okay,
and then we'll see what questions we have based on that.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, what is in here as far as bills. It would be House File 1097, and this is the language as it was amended here in committee. It also includes House File 111, the Cedar River State Water Trail, House File 182, Beard's Water Rules Moratorium, and the evaluation. House File 716, the ethanol plant EAW exemption for expansions. House File 901, which is a DIL bill making some changes to the Wetland Conservation Act. House File 908, Perkelson's bill on the Wetland Conservation Act and that making a number of changes there. House File 1115, the Adopt the WMA program. House File 1122, this is the bill dealing with terrestrial pesticides, and this the amendment to make this reflected as it was amended in the Ag Policy Committee, or Policy and Finance. House File 1148 is the Landfill Cleanup Program bill. It does include House File 1162, the Aquatic Invasive Species, and as the chair mentioned, it, the language in here is as it was amended in civil law. There's a House File 1205, which deals with county park fees, allowing them to exceed the state park fees. House File 1238, Fabian's bill about SSTS ordinances. House File 1243, the White Bear Lake Conservation District bill we heard. House File 1509, this is the various changes on the Clean Water Partnership Law. And the language in here includes amendments that were adopted in the Ag Committee. House File 1360, Torkelson's EQB bill is in here. House File 1451, the Chair's Shallow Lake Report. House File 1473 regarding waste management. And then those are the bills that are in here. And then there's some other things. There's a section in here that modifies Section 103G.31, Subdivision 5, and this has to do with water use permits and who can call a hearing on those and who can call for one. There's a few new repealers. One of them is a repeal of 84.02, various definitions related to native prairie. There's a repeal of 116C.723, and this is a EQB repealer that was missed in the original bill. There was a section in the EQB bill that was dropped because there was the same section of statute was being amended in House File 1509, so the House File 1509 section replaces that. There were some modifications to House File 908 that were worked out with Bowser, and there are some modifications to House File 1148 that were made per TCA had worked on some additional language there, and then there were some modifications to House File 716, the EAW bill, to address biobutanol sort of conversions from ethanol plants. And that's sort of the summary of what's in here.
Thank you. Questions to the bill? Representative Wagenia.
Do we have a fiscal note with us?
For which part of it, Representative Wagenius, were you wondering about?
Well, there are different rulemaking things in here, and do we have a compilation of a fiscal note of this whole thing?
There's not a compilation of a fiscal note for the whole thing, but we have, I believe, discussed all the different fiscal parts of it. I'm not aware of any the parts that haven't been discussed with fiscal impact. Any in particular that you were asking about?
No, I just wanted to know how we were going to carry the money.
Okay.
That's all.
Representative Wagenius, maybe if I could, Representative Torkelson, one area of concern that we tried to work on was modifications to the EQB, and I think Representative Torkelson would like to speak to that. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it's appropriate this time, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Why don't we
do
that?
Do the discussion first.
No. I think Representative Torkelson, that would be a good idea because that would be probably one of the bigger issues that Representative Wagenius would be asking about, and would be legitimate to wonder how we were going to deal with this. And I know I'd worked on it. Representative Torkelson, to your amendment, if you could explain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A6 amendment actually removes House File 1360 from this bill, which is the bill that would have dramatically changed some things with the EQB. A number of reasons for this, but really the basic reason is the fiscal situation. The fiscal note came back with costs that I did not anticipate when I assembled the bill, and because those costs are go across multiple jurisdictions of committees, I feel it best at this time to remove the bill from the omnibus bill. It's not an issue that I intend to drop, but it's an issue that I intend to address in the future. The bill, the 1360, was just passed out of state government and re-referred to this committee, where the bill will be held at this time.
Questions to the ASIC? Representative Wagenius.
I understand that, and the repealer all has to do with the EQB?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, this does remove all aspects of 1360, including the repealer. So if I understand the amendment correctly.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair and members, you'll see the repealer, but what it does is it just replaces the peeler in the bill, but it just leaves the sections that have nothing to do with the EQB bill. So it's just removing the EQB-related repealers.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, are we going to go over the repealers later?
We can do that whenever you want, Representative Wagenius. We're on the A6 right now, but we should go through any and all questions. And staff clarified to me that we actually, the committee that was going to come into this room after us is not going to be here, so we're free to stay until lunch. So we'll work through this and address all the concerns that folks have as we work through this bill. Representative Wagenius.
Well, since Representative Torkelson has the repealers in his bill or in his amendment, maybe he should explain them to us.
Representative Torkelson.
The repealers that remain in the bill are not my repealers. My repealers are removed, so I would be very difficult for me to explain the repealers without some help.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, the repealers, and you can just follow along on the A6 amendment. The first one, 84.02, and all the subdivisions, these are definitions related to native prairie. 85.013 on line 1.21. This is from the House File 1097, the original bill. I believe it's a wayside rest. I'm blanking on which one it is, but I believe it's going to be managed with something else. Maybe the DNR could discuss more in detail. 1.21, 103F.71, subdivision 7. This is a definition of official controls that I believe is no longer needed in the Clean Water Partnership Law. 103F.721, statewide water assessments. Another one related to the Clean Water Partnership Law, 103F.731, subdivision 1. Some eligibility requirements related to the Clean Water Partnership Law. And then 103F.761 is some requirements regarding a project coordination team, also included in the Clean Water Partnership Law bill. And then the paragraph B, 84D.02, subdivision 4. This is from the Aquatic Invasive Species Bill, and I believe this is removing some minimum requirements for the number of hours for aquatic invasive species inspections.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius, would you like the DNR to make comment or additionally on the repealers?
I think it was appropriate to put the repealers on the table.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for that point. To the A6. All those, I'm sorry, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I was just trying to follow along there. It looks like most of the ones that you're deleting with the amendment are the shift of responsibility from the EQB to the Clean Water Council. Is that correct?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, that is correct. That is all. Those changes will not be made if this amendment goes into effect.
Representative Hansen.
And then, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, some of the language we worked on for Clean Water Partnership in the Ag Committee does stay in, though, correct?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, this amendment has nothing to do with the Clean Water Partnership bill that we heard here and in Ag Committee, and the changes made in Ag are part of this omnibus bill.
And additional discussion to the ASEC. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Amendments adopted. Additional discussion to the bill. Do we want to, Representative Deal?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at page 4, section 7. It begins on line 4.25. And my question is does this acquisition, the language in here, does that apply to school trust lands as well regarding scientific and natural areas?
Mr. Meyer, are you, Mr. Meyer, Representative Dill, just repeat, you could repeat your question.
Into the frying pan, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Meyer, for coming in today. So kind of you. In section 7 of the bill. Thank you, Paige Bagel. Section 7 of the bill, line 4.25, that section looked to me as if it applies to the acquisition of scientific and natural areas, if I read this correctly. My question is, would that apply to establishing or acquiring land for scientific and natural areas in school trust, on school trust land?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, it would be by exchange, and in order to do that, I'm sorry, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The intent of this language is for us to allow for when we acquire other units of land within the Outdoor Recreation Act, state park, wildlife management area, aquatic management area, things like that, we can do that by exchange as well. Like a private landowner, for example, if they have a lower value piece of land and there's a piece that is either an in-holding or adjacent to a WMA, we may want to exchange something with them to do that. We're looking for the same options within the scientific and natural area. We would have to do that with the approval of the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee and the Land Exchange Board to exchange lands for SNAs. And frankly, Mr. Chair and Representative, that's the wrong way we're going on trust fund land management. Actually, we're exchanging out of status rather than into status. So that's not the intent.
Representative Deal.
Okay. I'm glad that we have that on the record, because it would limit, if we did exchange for those lands, it may, because they're scientific and natural areas, it may limit our ability to generate revenue from the land, and that was my concern. I'm glad to hear that I'm glad to hear your testimony. Thank you.
Additional comments?
Are you still taking amendments, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Deal. We'll next go to the A11-405. I believe Representative Hackbart, is that your bill? Or your amendment to a bill that we heard here in committee, I believe. Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I would move the A11-0405 amendment. That's the little omnibus off-road recreation vehicle bill that we had in this committee. It is now in Ways and Means, and I believe your bill has to go to Ways and Means anyway. We had this discussion, and you have some language in the bill that pertains to ATV trails and things, so I thought I'd try to amend it onto this bill and have a dual track for this legislation. It has to do with ATVs, changing the definition of ATVs, just to briefly go over some of these things. This bill is also on transportation and passed out of transportation this week and went to Ways and Means, and has dual registration for off-road motorcycles, that sort of thing.
Representative Hackbart, could you let the committee, it did change with one thing in transportation from the way we passed it here.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chairman. We had a watercraft, like jet skis and those kinds of things. We had changed some definitions there, and we took that out of the bill. That is not in this amendment. It's not in the bill, and it's not in this amendment. We deleted that out. So the watercraft issue is out of the bill.
To the 405. All those in favor of the A11-0405 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendments adopted. Next we'll do Representative Torkelson. I believe you have the A5 amendment. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A5 amendment.
Representative Torkelson, could you explain the A5?
Yeah, this is really the kind of the final piece in the WACA, Wetland Conservation Act portion of the bill. And It's really just some language to clear up the final details. If you would like more information, we would need a testifier to come forward.
You have a testifier. Representative Hansen has a question. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since this is on the wetland area, I would like the Board of Water and Soil Resources to come forward. I have a few questions on the wetland issue.
Mr. Jasky, if you could come forward. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, John Jasky, Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jasky, this amendment deals with one portion of some of the Wetland Conservation Act amendments. I'm trying to get an idea of the how many acres of wetlands we're actually dealing with some of the mining proposals and what this provision relates to. So could you tell me what Bowser's potential estimated impacted wetlands are in the greater than 80% counties?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I don't have a specific estimate of future potential impacts related to mining or any other industry or type of projects that would impact wetlands. I don't have it with me, the information that we have on the past activities over, you know, the number 20 years since the law has been in effect. I could provide that to you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hansen.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jasky, and with the chair's indulgence, because I wanted to go back to this 50 to 80% issue under this wetlands amendment, if that's okay.
Representative Hansen, we're going to have a lot of flexibility today. I may have misspoke. We're working to see if we can possibly stay in this room. We may need to move if we're not done by 10 to another room, but we're trying to work with the different committees. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jasky, looking at Section 61 of the delete all. And then going into, I think that whole section talks about kind of the basic framework of the Wetland Conservation Act, that if you impact a wetland within one of the areas, either the greater than 80% or the 50 to 80% area, or less than 50% area, then you replace it within those areas. And it appears this changes that fundamental premise to say that you could replace in a less than situation. So if you're in a greater than 80, you can replace it in a 50 to 80 or less than 50. Or if you're in a 50 to 80, you can replace it in less than 50. Is that correct, what we're doing here?
Director Jasky.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, just a little bit of background. The greater than 80% areas are basically the northeastern part of the state, and the less than 50% are the southern and western part of the state, and the remaining areas are between those two, and that's the wetland-rich areas are the greater than 80% area and just the opposite, but the less than 50% area. And so the way the law has been constructed over time is that you always look for replacement sites for unavoidable wetland impacts nearest the site where they were impacted. And then if they're not available, then you go a little bit further and look for them further afield. This is not being changed in this proposed legislation here. That principle still remains in place. What this language here that you're referring to on lines 34.19 to 34.22 does is simply it prevents the migration of wetlands if that were to happen from the southwestern part of the state to northeast. You wouldn't want that to happen because it doesn't need to happen. We have plenty of opportunities in those parts of Minnesota. So that just keeps that principle intact. We're really just moving it from the lines that are being stricken below on 34.26 to 34.29. So the language is remaining the same. What's being, you know, changed is the steps there, and you see those below that section you referred to on line 34.23 to 34.25. We've taken a watershed approach to this, where you look on site, and then you look in a small watershed area near the impacted site, and then if you find something there, you take it. If not, you go to the larger watershed area, and if there's nothing there, you go to the county or the bank service area, and there's a map that we can provide that describes those bank service areas, which are really the basically the major river basins of the state of Minnesota. So having now applied this watershed approach, some of the other language is no longer relevant or needed, so we're not changing the policy. We're just, I think, being more consistent and being watershed-based in the way we look for those mitigation sites.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jashke, so when you would move away from the adjacent and then go into the watershed and then go into the other watershed, the ratio of replacement or restoration would increase?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, yes, generally true that the further away you go, there's a ratio, replacement ratio increase. However, there are also one other factor, and that is if the replacement is done in advance, then there is a racial benefit to that. So we prefer to have wetland replacement done in advance, so there's a racial reduction. We prefer to have it be close, so there's a racial, a lessening of the ratio for that. So these are provisions in the state rule that's been adopted to support this statute.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jashke, so if you're doing a replacement, if you're doing banking, you're doing it ahead of time, and that would be restoration rather than creation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, that's,
Director Jess.
That's correct, that restoration is preferred over creation, and the wetland banking system, by and large, has wetland restorations as the types of sites that are enrolled in it.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Jashke, what we just discussed, is that always going to be the case, or is there, you mentioned flexibility. I'm concerned that if we have to be replacing thousands of acres potentially of wetlands in the greater than 80% area, and we have to hop out of the watershed boundary, is that always going to result in an increase in the ratio with even with banking?
Director Jashke.
Mr. Jim Representative Hansen, I can't say always. I would say most of the time. The one thing that we are proposing in here is a systematic approach, a scientific-based assessment in order to do that, so that we, when an impact occurs in an area where there's very few opportunities to find a replacement site, that we don't keep repeating that same search. We do the search once systematically, scientifically, and once that search is complete, we know what the opportunities are, and then we direct those who are having to come up with a replacement through wetland banking or otherwise to those sites that are viable and will provide the wetland functions that were once in the place where the impacts occurred. So that's the one idea that's being included in here that didn't previously exist.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Jashke, so to do that, where is the cost born? Is the cost for that, this new system, going to be borne by Bowser or the affected soil and water districts, which may or may not be within the watershed that's impacted or where the creation is going to be? I'm wondering where the administrative tasking is going to be here, and that cost is going to be borne, and who bears the cost?
Director Jaskin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, the cost for those inventories or assessments will be done by choice, likely by a local government unit or a group of them. The one example that we have completed is one that was previously commissioned by the legislature in 07. That's this Northeast study. And that was paid for by the legislature, and Bowser commissioned that through contracts that were completed in 2010. So that one is finished, and that information will be useful in that part of the state. If there are other places in the state where we want to achieve something similar to that, you know, those will have to be done as, you know, interested parties choose to develop them. We are not developing those. We are in the position of approving these once they're completed, if they're satisfactory.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jashke, does the agency have the ability to bill back to the proposer of the impacts on the wetlands, or does it have to be for such a evaluation or such an administration of that task, or does that have to be borne by local property taxpayers if it's on the local government unit, or state taxpayers if it's the agency? Do you have the flexibility? I know when I was in the Soil and Water District, we reviewed development plans, and we could bill back administrative costs or for that evaluation to the proposer. Do you have that ability for this provision?
Director Jashke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, Bowser does not have the authority to bill back the time that it might take to approve one of these. The local governments have the ability to, you know, use their local fee sources or other sources of revenue to develop these. That's their discretion as to how they pay for that.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and maybe council or Mr. Reynolds can help me on this, but I think when we were talking about EAWs and EISs, there's somewhat of a bill-back ability there on the proposal. But here, if we're dealing, and I'm not concerned as much about the garden variety acre or two here, but if we're dealing with large proposals that impact hundreds or thousands of acres of wetlands, the cost that may be borne either by the state or by the local government on managing that. And I think we have precedent in other areas where we can bill back to the proposer the cost. Is that maybe Mr. Reynolds?
Mr. Reynolds?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do have in the EAW and in the EIS statute, there are provisions where the EAWs are charged back. I believe the EISs are charged back. At currently, the EAWs are not.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is something we should look at, particularly on if there's major impacted areas, what the cost is, and if this is going to Ways and Means, maybe that's something to look at here. But to the amendment,
Representative Hansen,
Mr. Dashke, the wetland areas on private lands preserved under this section are not eligible for replacement or mitigation credit if the area has been protected using public conservation funds. Is this amendment prospective from adoption on, or would that be effective for properties that are already purchased with public conservation funds?
Mr.
Director, yes.
Representative Hansen, it would be prospective, in my opinion. However, since we haven't had none of these yet approved under this provision, it would apply to all of them that would be approved with this amendment were to pass.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dashke, do you believe this provision affects only RIM purchased or RIM WRP or other conservation easements?
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, in my opinion, Mr. Hansen, is that it would affect all types of activities, whether it was an easement or some other type of conservation-funded protection to that property, federal, state, or local, wherever that source came from. Public conservation source would be the criteria we'd apply.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the RIM WRP rules currently would prohibit this, correct?
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, yes, they would. And, you know, this is limited to those greater than 80% counties where we typically wouldn't be doing many, if any, of those types of projects. So for that particular program, it's prohibited in several ways. So I think the answer would be certainly we would never have that happen with that program.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to be done, but then he said it was only within the 80% counties. So if we're restoring or if there's public funds used outside of the greater than 80% counties, this amendment still applies or does not apply?
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, the only place that you could ever establish wetland credits under this provision would be in those greater than 80% counties.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we did a restoration or a banking paid for a wetland restoration in a less than 50% county, that could not be used for credit in the greater than 80%.
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. I think the answer comes from a place outside of this amendment, but I think the answer is yes, we would not have that happen because it's paid for by public conservation funds.
Representative Hansen.
We may want to just double check on that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. I think this amendment's going in the right direction, but it's the question of is it complete enough? And that's what Representative Hansen was getting at. So the first question is protected in your book means any public expenditure, an easement, or other work done using public money.
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, yes, public conservation funds. Now, like just as a contrast, you know, there could be public funds from a road authority that might be looking to establish wetland preservation credits. That would be a different kind of public fund. But public conservation funds is where we would say you cannot use those to accomplish wetland mitigation or replacement under this law.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. Well, just applying this statute, much of this work is being done in anticipation of mining, and how many acres are people projecting right now that this might affect of wetlands in those areas?
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, I don't have a number that I can point to as fact, but, you know, I've heard and I would believe that, you know, over many years there will be perhaps thousands of acres ultimately affected because of the large scale of those operations and the fact that they're in a very, very wetland-rich area. And, you know, one of the goals, you know, not directly but indirectly in this legislation would be to make sure we find the absolute best mitigation sites that we can for those impacts when and if they do occur. This sets that up as a way of using the science-based assessment to find those most beneficial and viable sites systematically rather than having to go look for them each time again a new project is proposed.
Representative Wiginius.
So if a mining company decided to do preservation and had its own bank, that would be private lands.
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, presumably, yes, it would be on private land that they would have acquired the rights to.
Representative Wiginius.
And then there would be no eligibility for replacement credits. Is that
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, this provision, you only get some amount of credit by preserving what you have if you can show there's a demonstrable threat to that wetland in some other way that's not regulated. And if that's the case, then you get a partial, and typically the ratio is 1-8 at most, credit for preserving that otherwise unavoidable threat to that wetland. Like I said, we have not yet had an actual project use this provision. But the suggestion here of having it be applicable to land other than public land, I think, makes sense because the public land really shouldn't have any threats to the wetlands on them. Those are protected by the fact that they're owned in public trust. So this option provides where we have a wetland at risk and the threat is removed, that there's some acknowledgement of that being eligible for wetland credit.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you.
Okay. To the A5 amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question, and I'm trying to get a handle on total impact here, and I see Mr. Pagels in the audience, and maybe if he could come to the table, I have a question for him.
Go ahead, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pagel, you've heard kind of the line of questioning. I'm just wondering how many potential acres are we talking about with impact here in the greater than, and I don't know if you can speak for all impacts, but you know, just what are the numbers to your best of your knowledge of impacted acres in the greater than 80% area?
Welcome, Mr. Pagel. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Chair, my name is Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. Chair, to the question, Representative Hansen, I don't have that number. However, there was a study conducted through funding that has those numbers. It looked at the first part of the study, where there are wetlands now. Second part of the study was, where do we see that there's going to be wetlands or areas to replace wetlands? In other words, some dry land in the area. As far as the exact number of how many acres will be disrupted, I do not have that number. I think as each mine looks at their mining plan with the DNR, that becomes part of their permit to mine. and I do not have those numbers. I apologize.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Mr. Jashke can email out a link to that Northeast mitigation study from 07 to the committee so people can see that.
And I see him nodding yes, Representative Hansen. So if you could get that to us, Director, thank you. Additional questions to the A5? All those in favor of the A5 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. A5 is adopted. Next, members, I think Representative Fabian, you have the A7. Representative Fabian, to your A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A7 amendment was brought to me by the landfill operators, and what they want to do here with this is extend the permitting terms from 5 years to 10 years. And I know that Mr. Carlson is here. He can probably address the specifics of it if people have questions with regards
Mr.
to
Mr. Carlson, if you could come forward, identify yourself for the record, and give us your short testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business in St. Paul, and I represent the Lyon County Board of Commissioners. We operate a seven-county regional solid waste system in southwestern Minnesota, which includes solid waste disposal, recycling, household hazardous waste. And so among the core here, I'm a garbage lobbyist. Mr. Chair and members, we are also active with the landfill operators group, and we've experienced a problem with both the term of our permits and the environmental review that is conducted in our on our solid waste facilities. And what we're asking in the amendment, which is being offered by Representative Fabian, would allow or require, more importantly, the environmental review that takes place on a solid waste land disposal facility to include the entire facility. We've been getting that, which is what they did on the Lyon County facility. However, other county facilities are only getting approval or environmental review on smaller increments of their landfills. So you don't look at the cumulative impact of what the full design capacity of the facility is. And so there really isn't an opportunity for people commenting to look at what the full impact of that facility would be. To put it in perspective, if I have a 100 home housing development, and I go in and ask the RGU to look at the only look at the first five houses that I'm going to build, they would tell you that that's just not allowed by the rules. You have to look at the entire impact of the 100 homes that are ultimately going to be built. That is all we're trying to do here with this amendment in Subdivision 1, is to require that the entire site and design capacity be reviewed in environmental review. And this has a significant cost impact to counties. If they have to do environmental review every 5 years when they have a permit renewed, that can cost between, depending on the size of the facility, between $50,000 and $100,000 per review every 5 years, and that's in addition to your permit review. So we believe that this just makes it consistent with other environmental review, and we have had problems with some landfill facilities only getting incremental environmental review. Subdivision 2 of the bill that deal, or the amendment that deals with the 5-year permits, we've seen a consistent issue with the MPCA where most of the facilities are operating under expired permits. I believe the testimony from Olmsted County down in Rochester, their landfill is operating 38 months now into their expired permit. We believe, you know, in working with the MPCA, that the 10-year permit for a facility is not resisted by them. It is more consistent with the technology and the changing technology, and so we'd appreciate your support for this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Fabian.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know whether to address Representative Fabian or Mr. Carlson. But there are a couple of things in here. I'm going to look at 1.11. You say, once shall not modify or change the project without approval of the proposer. So that assumes that we learn nothing in the future, that there is no science that comes in the future that teaches us something, or that the neighbors can't say anything. The neighbors are completely foxed out, even if something happens. Am I reading that correctly, Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I don't think so. Because what we're saying and what we have seen happen is someone will propose a design capacity for a facility, and the MPCA will say, we're only going to perform environmental review for half of, for example, the airspace or design capacity that you have submitted. And we think that's unfair to the public who wants to comment, because we ultimately know that we're going to have greater design capacity. And environmental review, as you know, is designed to ascertain if there is the potential for adverse environmental effects. And that doesn't matter if it is half of what you proposed or all of it. We still have to design for and address the potential for adverse environmental impacts on the ultimate design capacity. And so we don't quite read it that way. I understand your question, but we don't read it that way. The public's going to get a chance to comment and review the potential for adverse environmental effects on the entire project as proposed. And that doesn't mean that new technology can't come forward, but we have to design for adverse impacts right at the time we submit the project, and not just half of it.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay, so if somebody has a huge ultimate design capacity, and it's it can't be modified or changed, then it seems to me that the whole review of the project is going to be substantially greater, and that the rules are going to need to change. So this shall amend the rules, I understand, is what has to happen in order to accommodate this language. But that then says we need a fiscal note on that. And have we seen a fiscal note on this?
Representative Fabian, have you got a fiscal note on this bill?
Mr. Chair, no, I do not.
There is not a fiscal. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, you need to complete that sentence, because what often happens, it says it shall not be modified or changed without the approval of the proposer. And so what we're trying to avoid is the situation where the agency, through fiat, changes what you're trying to propose. And many times, as you're working through a project with the regulatory agency, they will say, you know, maybe we should scale this back, it's too big, and they consent to that. Well, the only time we're saying that wouldn't change is unless we disagree with that. If we want to have a larger project proposed, they wouldn't be able to do it just arbitrarily. We would have to do it by consent, which, as you know, happens very frequently. We also had the bill in state government finance last week, and there was no discussion of any fiscal impact from the language.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. However, if you're changing the rules of the game on how these things are literally cited, and this is going to be literally cited because you're talking about the ultimate design capacity of the site, then PCA has got to look at it in a different light, which means they may have to revisit their rules, and I'm just asking for the fiscal impact of the revisiting the rules. And it just seems to me we need a fiscal note on this.
Mr. Carlson.
Amendment.
Members, just so you know, we're not changing the rules in the middle of the game. What has happened, not through a rule change but through agency interpretation, is they are changing the rules now to only review part of a facility. the Lyon County Board, when we submitted for our environmental review, they did review the entire design capacity. Of the nine that I'm aware of, five of them have had the ultimate design capacity reviewed. It is only the agency who has changed their review procedure and said, now we're only going to do it incrementally and change your project, that has brought us to the table. So this, what you're talking about as far as the design review and changing the rules, we've already complied. This really doesn't impact my county on that part of the bill, because we're done with environmental review, and many of the landfills are done with their ultimate design capacity environmental review. The change in the rules has come from an agency interpretation to say we're only going to do it incrementally, which we think is inconsistent with what has been done in the past, and that is why the bill is before you.
Representative Wagenius, do you want either, they're both standing at the steps ready to come down. Do you want either one to come down, EQB or MPCA?
They would like.
Yeah, Mr. Kredalka. You could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Just real quick on the proposal, there are the two parts. The first I'll start with subdivision one, dealing with the environmental review. When an EAW or an EIS or environmental review is done on a landfill, there is a general understanding what the whole project will look like, the boundaries, and where various cells may be located. However, because some of these landfills could live up to 80 years, it's very hard for our staff to determine what the specifics will be when they get to some of these later cells, what the technologies will, what the practices will be, and then also what the situation is. What is the environmental situation and land use in the area? The landfill may have no neighbors at one point. 25 years down the road, there could be development all along the side. There could be changes in just traffic going by or the wildlife that's living by, either to the benefit of the landfill or to the detriment of the landfill. Those things are too hard for us at this point to do an environmental review for a lifetime of a landfill. So those larger ones are permitted in smaller chunks when they are very large. Also, right now, the other triggers for existing landfills in current rule is 100,000 cubic yards of waste expansion or 25% expansion of existing waste for those that have been permitted in their entirety. On the issue of the fiscal note, there was one request in the Senate. I do not have an actual copy of it. I don't know the details off the top of my head. On the second subdivision two piece with the permits, we have been working with the author and the Senate and the group, and the initial proposal was a lifetime permit, which was unacceptable to the Pollution Control Agency, and the 10-year is more palatable.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think we need a fiscal note on this, and I think the agency is wise in saying we don't know what's going to happen in 80 years. Certainly don't know what's going to happen in 50 years, or probably 25. So to mandate being godlike, I think is not what we should be doing in statute.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson, quickly.
Briefly, Mr. Chair and members, just so you know, the change in the project or the expansions that Mr. Kadelka is talking about would still be subject to new environmental review. This is just as the project is proposed. So those new changes that would be coming forward would then be subject to new environmental review. Anything that would be beyond what was proposed, submitted, and reviewed would be subject to additional review. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. All those in favor of the A7 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'm sorry, Representative Drazkowski, you did have a question. Representative Drazkowski, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Carlson, if he's still available. Mr. Carlson, just subdivision 2 and the addition of that, like you, I have seen agency creep happening in several agencies here in the last several months. Is there any way that that can just simply be written into statute instead of going through the time and energy of a rule review process?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Drazkowski, while I'd like to say that's the case, the legislature's authorized the MPCA to adopt rules for permitted facilities. The current rule is 5. This really doesn't require a lengthy rule. It just says you're going to change that as it relates to solid waste from facilities from 5 to 10. That is more consistent with common practice. I don't think the agency has heartburn over that, but the 5 years is not contained in statute, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I guess I'm not worried about the agency. I'm looking at the people and businesses in Minnesota, but thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, on that point, the 10-year extension is prospective. Is that correct? So when they're going, it's not just a blanket, all of a sudden extension to 10 years. It's prospective as new permits come up.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, yes.
All those in favor of the A7 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment's adopted. Next members, Representative Anderson, I believe you have the A3. Representative Anderson to the A3.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A3 amendment to...
Representative Anderson, could you explain the A3?
After this bill was heard in this committee, it was moved on to the Ag Committee, and there were some concerns raised about... the consequences of affecting other types of applications of chemicals. So we tried to narrow it down and not interfere with the 4 areas where PCA is going to be requiring permits, such as aquatic application, forest canopy, things like that. All we want to do is make sure that spraying done by agricultural interests on terrestrial or land applications that remain under the prerequisite authority of the Department of Agriculture. And the language was added to narrow that scope to ag spraying, and that's what this amendment does, Mr. Chairman.
To the A3, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a little better.
Well, we're glad to hear that. Additional discussion to the A3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Members, next we have the... we'll give this a try and see. I believe this room is reserved at 10 o'clock. If they don't show up, we have a couple more amendments. If we need to move, we're going to move to room 10. But Representative Fabian, I believe you have the A4.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A4 amendment, there's two parts to that. In the first part, what we're attempting to do here is to set up kind of a one-stop shop for permits, so that when a responsible government unit is named as such, the proposers are going to have one place to go to make sure that they know what to do in terms of where their permits are and where they stand. And all we're asking here is that they make this list available of what are the permits that are needed, what is the status within 30 days. In the second part of the amendment, on page 47, we are striking the number 25, changing that to 100, and we're asking that the people who would ask, would do a petition for the EA to put an EAW in place would have to reside within the county or the adjoining county.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. I believe we have a testifier, Mr. Strait. Are you in the audience? We had heard, if you could please come forward. Identify yourself for the record, and you can have 2 minutes for testimony. Welcome, Mr. Strait.
Chairman McNamara, representatives, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Jeff Strait, S-T-R-A-T-E. I'm a resident of Eden Prairie for 17 years, and I've been actively involved with my city council, Hennepin County, and developers on development issues in my city. I am here today because I think as a citizen you might want to hear my take on the proposed amendment to change the threshold of 25 signatories to a petition for an environmental assessment worksheet to 100. I am one of these citizens who's actually collected signatures for these amendments, and I can say that it is very difficult to do so. Even in a city like Eden Prairie, which has the highest voter turnout in the state, year after year, election after election, and like all of your communities, is run basically by volunteers. Environmental assessment worksheets are very technical. There are procedures in place at the UQB, EQB and the City Council to reject nuisance petitions of this sort. The ones that I've worked on have resulted in better development projects, not only for the city and the residents in that part of the city. They've also gotten the developer a better project. And Eden Prairie, of course, is a very fortunate and suburban place to live, but the system has worked quite well here. So I wanted you to know that from a citizen's point of view, it is quite difficult to get even 25 signatures. It's complex. It's not like saving the whales or any of these other kind of petitions that may be floating around. You have to sit down with people and talk at length about these. Because people don't take these lightly. I also think that citizen participation in this, especially in rural areas, will be greatly hampered if this threshold from 25 or from 50 to 100 is raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Strait. Questions for the testifier? Thank you. All those in favor of the A4 say aye. I'm sorry, Representative Wagenius.
Question for Representative Fabian, if I could.
Yes, Representative Wagenius.
Representative Fabian, I am looking at your 1.14 line, and so you're limiting folks who can ask for a petition for an EAW, let me see if I'm getting this right, to people who reside or own property in the county or in an adjoining county where the proposed action will be taken. Am I getting that correct?
Representative Fabian.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, yes, you are.
Representative Wagenius.
What I want to ask about is why you're choosing county lines as the borders for who can ask for a petition. I'm thinking about you ask for petitions because you're worried about two things, or one of two things. You're worried about your air, or you're worried about your water. And I know of no way to stop air pollution from going from one county over another county to a third county. So you're saying we only care about counties who breathe in two counties, but not in counties beyond that. But that's one thing. But then I'm looking at water. And so you are putting pollution into a stream or a river, and it's going downstream. But the downstream folks are being wiped out. I think that is entirely unfair. If it's groundwater and folks who are using, say, a city as a well in a county that's not very far away, but just the way the lines are set up, they are pumping water out of a well, and you are, a proposer is proposing something huge a couple counties over, but it's on the same groundwater. And they have no say. So the citizens have bought that well, and they're using it for their drinking water, and you're saying, but you have no say. I think that's entirely unfair, Mr. Chair, and I'll ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. I think members, Representative Hansen's on the list. I think what we'll do is recess right now. We're just going to reconvene in 5 minutes in room 10. Members, I think, let me just ask, Luke, would you like us to individually grab our personal stuff right here? And including your name tag, and members, the name tags, don't switch them. I'm reminded by House staff, they're very expensive. So we're going to reconvene, members and audience, just in 5 minutes.
Let's reconvene.
Are we on? We good? Luke? Okay. Let's reconvene. I think Representative Hansen Representative Hansen, and we had, what are we on? Representative Fabian's, are we on the A4, right?
Yeah.
The A4. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to hear from the Pollution Control Agency and the DNR on the bill, and then specifically, you know, kind of on the time and cost of the amendment. And then maybe while they're coming to the table, I'd like to ask Representative Fabian about the own property provision. So
where do you want to start, Representative Hansen?
Maybe if we can get, if they're ready, the...
Mr. Kudalka. Welcome back.
Mr. Chair and committee members, again, for the record, Kirk Kudalka from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm sorry, I missed the question, but you're talking about the first section there on the environmental permitting timeline requirements?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Kudalka could talk about the cost and the additional work that this would require.
Mr. Kudalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have been working with the chamber on this language dealing with the environmental permit timeline requirements. We're still massaging the language to make sure it works into a program that we are working on an enterprise project to help businesses funnel into the state agency and permitting system. There has not been a fiscal note on this. I do not know what additional work it may or may not entail.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like it's providing some tasking here. The state agency named shall develop a timeline for all state agency environmental permits required and make that timeline available to the proposal within a timeline. And then it looks like this is tasking work. So I would assume when work is tasked that there'd be cost to that.
Mr. Kudalka.
At this point, I do not have any final numbers, unfortunately, to share with the committee. We can make sure our fiscal folks look at it, but at this point I don't have anything definite.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Mr. Patton here or from DNR, if the other agencies or EQB has a comment on cost on the amendment.
We will hear from them. To Representative Wagenius, to this point. Representative Wagenius, can you pull your mic down? Thank you.
Yes. To this point, I mean, I think the underlying thought here is issuing timeline requirements is probably not a bad one. However, bill that passed gutting the agency's money in the very areas that they will need to do this kind of work is having us operate in a kind of dreamland. We're saying, we'll take your money away, and yes, and we want you to do more. So I am looking at the House File 1 and thinking, well, we had some goals and timelines in there, and that was pretty good until we took away the personnel who could meet those goals, and now we're adding new goals. Not that these goals are bad, but how, I mean, we're not living in a real world, and that's what troubles me about this piece of this amendment. The other piece of the amendment has different problems.
Representative Hansen, why don't we hear from Mr. Myers there. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. And my comments are just on the first section of this bill, 1.5 to 1.12. And Representative Wagenius brings up good points, but we also feel that this work can be done within the time frames that we have. We've actually been working on this language, trying to improve it throughout the process. The costs will have to be borne somewhere by the project proposer, by our general funds, but we'll work on identifying what those costs for this might be. There's also other pieces within 116C that help people do this, and there's within DEED an ombudsman position that I think should be reevaluated again to help coordinate and make sure people, both the project proposers and the agencies, understand what needs to be done and how we move forward. So I can't tell you what these costs would be right now. It's going to be different for every project, but we need to try to figure out that balance. How do we deal with these activities and the budget reductions we're facing and meet expectations that are needed, but also provide this work? So it's something I'll get more information for you, Mr. Chair, as this move forward, but we need to try to figure out the answers on both sides.
Questions for Mr. Meyer? I think Mr. Patton, Representative Hansen, wanted to hear your testimony, and you had mentioned you want to testify. If you could come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bob Patton. I'm Executive Director of the Environmental Quality Board. I do not have comments on the first part of this that you were asking about. I do have comments on the latter part.
Mr. Patton.
Mr. Chair, members, just very briefly, in terms of lines 1.13 through 1.15, the changes to citizen petition, I just wanted to say that the citizen petition process can be thought of as kind of a safety valve. As you know, the environmental review process operates by thresholds, and there are mandatory thresholds for EAWs. The citizen petition process allows citizens to, when they have a concern that they feel might not be addressed because a project doesn't hit a mandatory threshold, they can come to the RGU and get a review of by the RGU on its merits of whether the project meets the standard of that it will, whether it will may have significant environmental impacts. So there is a merit-based decision by the RGU, and any changes such as proposed here, raising this the numerical threshold for number of people that can petition, or placing some residency requirements, really limits access of citizens. The last one particularly, a lot of the impacts that you might be looking at may not follow those boundaries of the counties, water quality, air quality impacts, and so forth. And so we have some concerns about those changes to the statute. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Additional questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to go to my other question.
Yep. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I'm looking on lines 1.14 and 1.15 and concerned about vulnerable individuals, thinking about daycare centers, nursing homes, group homes, and wondering how the owning of property or whether residency, how that applies in those cases where you may have people moving in and out on a transitional basis, maybe in a group home or a nursing home, and they don't establish residency, perhaps. So I'd like your maybe some clarification on because they may be impacted by air quality from a sighting. Just a little more of your thoughts on those particular things.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Ms. Taylor or Mr. Eloff, do we have definition for reside in statute?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not aware of one, but I have not looked.
Okay. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Jaskowski, you know what?
Just a comment to Representative Hansen's point.
Well, I think he asked Representative Fabian a question. We'll come to you next. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen. Again, I don't know the definition of reside or residence either, but it would seem to me that anybody who lives in that county or the adjoining county would be empowered to sign a petition and be a part of that.
Representative Jaskowski, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I believe that for the purpose of voting, you have to be, 30 or 40 days or something like that. If somebody is only living in a particular community for 30 or 40 days, they aren't going to be impacted by it anyway.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jaskowski, we're not talking about voting here. We're talking about living and breathing and drinking water. And I'm going to think about a specific situation when my father, who's passed away, was in a nursing home 2 or 3 counties away. And he lived in a group home transitional for several months, and then he would go into a nursing home if he had an illness, and then he would go back into the group home. Now, what I see here is that under this provision, I couldn't sign
relating to a sighting of something that was right next to him, the way this is written, if as a hypothetical case. He's not there anymore, but let's say you have a guardian who is taking care of an elderly person, or in that particular case, I would think that they would then be written out with the way the provision is here. And I think that would be wrong. And I would encourage people to vote against the amendment.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm particularly sensitive to the provisions in the beginning on line 13 of this amendment. I have experience with three separate landfill proposals in my district, and sort of contrary to what seems to be the assumption here about agencies gone wild. In each of these situations, what has been felt very strongly by all of the citizens that would be immediately impacted is that the PCA has gone ahead with its permitting without giving any concern to the concerns of the residents. And what's being proposed in this amendment is to remove even farther any way that people that are concerned about a proposed project have of having their concerns considered. I don't know why we would want to make it more difficult for people who are immediately affected by a proposed project, particularly when we're talking about such things as landfills, to have their concerns addressed. And Mr. Chair, I would move to delete in this amendment lines 1.13, 1.14, and 1.15. And I'd ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty's moved an oral amendment to delete 1.13, 1.14, and 1.15. Discussion to Representative Hilty's oral amendment. Roll call's been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Beard? Dill?
No.
Drazkowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
Aye.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hilty?
Yes.
Knuth?
Yes.
Purcell?
Yes.
Quam?
No.
Scott? Torkelson?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
There being six ayes and nine nays, the amendment does not prevail. To the A4, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly supported the Hilty amendment there. This is, I think there's some merit in the first part of this amendment, but when we get into well, we have public waters and public air, and then we're going to say that you live in the state of Minnesota and you don't have the right to comment on something. I think that's going exactly where we don't want to go as Minnesotans. We're talking about EAW here. This is supposed to be a very baseline assessment of environment. So I just think this sends the wrong message here. Either we all are in this thing together, we own these waters as a citizens of the state together in the air, or we don't. And if we're going to go back to where landowners have the say here, which this look, well, let's go back to the kings and lords and all that stuff what we fought against to get away from in England in the first place. I mean, what are we talking about here? You're taking rights away. not going to sell in my district. I've got to vote against it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Purcell. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara.
Aye.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, members. This is on the A4 amendment on the Representative Fabian. It's a roll call.
I request.
Representative Wagenius had asked for a roll call. I'm sorry to not slow down a little bit here. This is on the A4 amendment, Representative Fabian's amendment. Clerk will call the roll on the A4.
McNamara.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Beard. Dill.
Pass.
Draskowski.
Aye.
Fabian.
Aye.
Falk.
No.
Ackbarth.
Yes.
Hancock.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Hilty.
No.
Knuth.
No.
Purcell.
No.
Quam.
Aye.
Scott. Torkelson.
Aye.
Wagenius.
No.
There being 8 ayes and 6 nays, the amendment is adopted. Members, I believe we have one more amendment. Representative Dill, I believe it's your A11 413 amendment. It supersedes one that was in our packet earlier, and then Representative Dill has a Representative Dill, 2-year amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got one that's less controversial that's handwritten.
I'm sorry.
And if we could do that one first, I think that there won't be any real discussion on this one. And it's you'll find it on line 30, if it pleases the chairman, line 30.32. And Ms. Taylor had been kind enough to write it out for me. Do you have that, Mr. Chair?
Representative Dill, it's the handwritten at the top. I have it, House File 1097 DE1-2.
Correct.
Members have it as Representative Dill's name.
It has my name in the middle of it.
Largely, does the audience have it too? Is there some in the back? Okay. Thank you. Representative Dill, to your handwritten amendment.
Okay, first I'd like to make a very slight oral amendment on. After the word authorized on line 32, we need to add the word or so that it reads right. That's technical from Ms. Taylor. And so what this does, members, is it just reinforces that the wetland replacement is completed prior to the wetland impacts that are authorized. And so what happens under a permit to mine when they do this wetland replacement is they first, after it's approved by the department, they first do the work of replacing the wetland and then later disrupt the wetland. And this just clarifies that, because some people think that this is a part of a banking system, and under these permits to mine, they have to do the wetland replacement and then disrupt the wetland. So that's what that is a clarifying technical type amendment. Mr. Chair, stand for questions.
Ms. Taylor, can you read the amendment as it will read in the bill? Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair and members, if you go to page 30 of the bill, what it would read, it'd say, for project-specific wetland replacement completed prior to wetland impacts authorized or conducted under a permit to mine within the Great Lakes and Rainy River watershed basins, those basins shall be considered a single watershed for purposes of determining wetland replacement ratios.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, the practical impact of this would be if there was an impact or if there was a wetland lost under a permit to mine in, say, St. Louis County, that this would require that it is replaced perhaps in Coochachin County prior to the destruction in St. Louis County. Is that your practical understanding?
Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. It actually is not quite that way, but I think most people would interpret it that way. It doesn't say in there that you couldn't replace it in Lake Cook or St. Louis, but it also says that you could replace it in the other two counties that are in the in that 1 and 2 watersheds as well. So, I mean, we had a study that says the wetlands are diminishing, and you're familiar with the study. We appropriated $340,000 or something to do the study.
But it does not say that you couldn't do it in those other counties that are in one, which is the Great Lakes watershed. What it does say that it could be done really in one or two. And you're right, it will most likely be done in two, in Cooch and Lake of the Woods.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dill, when you're using the word, earlier you used the word banking, and then the statutes or the amendment talks about replacement. Are you looking at restoration of prior converted wetlands, or are you looking at creation of wetlands where there may not have been wetlands before?
Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the point of the amendment is to clarify that they're completed prior to the disruption. That's the point of this actual amendment. Now, if we're going to, you know, Representative Hansen, you're far more knowledgeable on these wetlands issues, so I'd ask Mr. Jaski if you want to answer that question, because it's more technical and really beyond the realm of my full understanding. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that as he's coming down, I think that they're in agreement on this language that I brought forward.
Representative Hansen, could you repeat your question for Director Jaski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Jaski. So, kind of following up on the earlier discussion we had with replacement here, is this restoration or creation?
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, it's not specific to either of those. It would allow either of those options to be used for replacement under the DNR's permit to mine. What it would simply do is allow it to be either in watershed area one or two, and I've got a colored map, which maybe some of you saw. I can certainly pass that around. It shows those two areas, but some of the mining operations are straddling that line, and there's reasons why you'd want some flexibility, and I think this would allow them to do that in advance, therefore having the benefit of a reduced ratio, because we know exactly what we're getting, whether it's a creation or a restoration. By and large, they're pursuing restorations when, as Representative Dill said, they're looking further away because those are the most viable sites.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Director Jaski, in terms of wetland functions, is it a better in terms of a functioning wetland to restore one that's been converted or to create one where there was not one before?
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, in almost every case, it's better to restore a wetland than to create one in terms of getting the functions back that you previously had.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and Director Jaski, what's the agency's position on the amendment?
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, this language would make it consistent with the way our current rule works, which is to provide preference for a restoration or creation, in this case possibly, done in advance of the actual impact. That's what this language would provide for under the DNR's permit to mine.
Thank you. Additional questions to the Representative Dill's, I guess we're calling it the DE1-2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Representative Dill, now to what I thought was to the A11-0413 amendment. Okay, Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this language is about essentially about Lutzen and the Lutzen Ski Hill. They have a water appropriation permit, and they need to have that increased from the Poplar River. And the language in the Senate is the language of the A4 amendment, which you had originally in your package. And that language is goes a lot further than this. This is quite a bit more restrictive. And what this does is it increases the appropriation to 150 million gallons of water annually for snowmaking and potable water, but frankly it's mainly for snowmaking, until such time that the river runs less than the Q90 for five consecutive days, and then it must cease until the Q90 is achieved again. Let me explain the Q90. That sounds like some stock market term. But essentially, it's 90% of the flow of the river. And so the 10% of the flow that's above the 90 is actually usable water. Now, there's some discussion that even that usable water, that 10% above the 90%, is any use of that could cause some stress possibly to trout. But I mean, you know, nature does its fair share of work in getting below the Q90, as I understand it as well. So what this does is it allows them to withdraw water that's above the 90 percentile in that 10% of usable water, unless it goes below the Q90, either because the river stream flow reduces on its own natural occurrence or because they draw too much water out over a period of time and it goes below the Q90. Then it's when it gets to the Q90 and above again, they can start reducing water. Again, they discontinue their water use, it goes back up possibly, or there's more runoff in the river and it goes back up above the 90th percentile. It also says in the in the amendment that the permit shall be evaluated at the end of 5 years for impacts to the river and possible alternate water sources. And let me tell you what that is about. That is about the fact that we have been working hard the last couple of years to find a way to get water from Lake Superior up to the top of the ski hill so that we don't take any water out of the Poplar River, which is the trout stream. And, for example, right below the ski hill is the Superior National Golf Course, and they appropriate water from Lake Superior. So in working with the interest groups, which are the various interest groups I'm sure will come up and testify, we're all in agreement that we need to get an appropriation from Lake Superior. We're all in agreement that we need to have this water supply and find the funding to fund this improvement so that the ski hill can, the whole community revolves around the ski hill. Virtually every single thing that happens there in the wintertime revolves around the ski hill, and many of my constituents and you legislators go up there and break their legs on the side of that mountain. It helps our Cook Hospital as well when you do that. But nonetheless, it's a real enjoyable place. So I did want to do one thing, Mr. Chairman. If you'll look at line 1.12, and members, if you look at line 1.12, I'd like to make an oral amendment to put a period after the word purposes and strike the words without regard to minimum flow or water level requirements. And requirements is on line 1.13. So it would read, for snowmaking and potable water purposes, period, and then on 1.3, if the flow value of the river is less than the Q90. So we'd strike without regard to minimum flow or water level requirements, which is on 1.2 and 1.3, Mr. Chairman.
To Representative Dill's oral amendment, does everybody have it? Deleting those words on line 1.12 and 1.13, the word requirements. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment, the oral amendments adopted to the 413. I know we have some testifiers. Mr. Lincheski, are you in the audience? You'd like to testify? Please come down. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Lencheski. I'm a member of Trout Unlimited. I actually fish the Poplar River. Trout Unlimited, we're opposed to this amendment. I appreciate that Representative Dill is trying to find a solution. I think we all agree there's that we need a long-term solution, which is an appropriation from Lake Superior. However, we still are, have problems with this amendment. What this does is it sacrifices a public resource, namely the trout stream, for the benefit of one business. And it's essentially a public subsidy, but what's unusual here is that rather than subsidizing with cash, we're asking the anglers to essentially pay the subsidy. They're forced to, give up a public water for the benefit of this one business. Again, there is an alternate source. It's Lake Superior. It's an issue of cost, and a business that doesn't want to invest, in getting that alternate source. It would prefer the continued subsidy from the stream. So let me just briefly explain why this is so devastating for that trout stream. Why winter withdrawals matter so much. The North Shore streams are short on groundwater. It's almost entirely surface water. They get very low and cold in the winter. And combined with cold air temperatures, they have the potential, and they do occasionally freeze solid to the bottom in these really low flow conditions. This is the time that makes or breaks these streams. It's the winter time. And very harsh conditions, even base flows, which do not, cause a stream to freeze to the bottom, basically dry up. Individual pools, traps trout, traps the brook trout eggs that are in the gravel over the winter. Those all end up high and dry in certain stretches. But these are very harsh conditions. If you withdraw from the base flow, you can freeze it solid. that will kill everything in the stream, all the trout eggs, all the juvenile trout, all the food they feed on. This stream has a pretty good rebounding a coastal brook trout population. It's got a great wild steelhead fishery. But all the eggs and juveniles are destroyed just by one event in the winter of essentially freezing these streams out. So it's a public resource. It's devastating when this happens. And interestingly, the population in the lower 3 miles of the river below the intake is relatively relatively low compared to above the intake. And I don't think that's just by coincidence. It suggests that maybe these excessive withdrawals may be limiting the trout population. But our concern is that we'll see repeated complete freeze-outs of the stream several years in a row. So that's why this is so devastating. The Q90 represents kind of the low flow level. I know the representative is working on this this issue. We appreciate that. However, we still think that there should be a sunset in this amendment at a minimum. We suggest maybe 3 years, because what we need is some real incentive for this business to move forward and secure that alternate water source. I mean, they've been in violation of this permit for 9 years, sort of stringing along the DNR, and it's high time that we get about the business of finding a source where we can both bolster the skiing industry and the fishing tourism industry. So very concerned. Again, we all agree that Lake Superior is the long-term source. We don't think this amendment is a good idea, and at a minimum, we think there should be a sunset date placed in there where the permit would just cease. I mean, we need to have some incentive to get this fixed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any estimate of when or how many kind of total freeze-outs it would take to do irreparable harm to this trout stream?
Mr. Lincheski.
Chair, Representative Wagenius, each freeze-out would kill whatever year classes are there. I mean, if you had, let's say, perhaps four in a row, I think that would do a pretty good job of completely wiping out the system. I think there are some brook trout that are flushed down from above into some stretch, but the lower river already is pretty stressed. I think the solid freeze-outs, as long as it's once every 5 years, maybe that would be okay. I mean, your population's harmed, but I would say you lose year classes with the fish that come in from the lake. They obviously have the repeat spawners. They can survive for a while. You could do it for 4 or 5 years maybe, and the few remaining old fish might still be able to seed that, but at a certain point, you've just lost the population entirely. So,
Representative Wagenius.
Representative Dill, when I look at the bill, or I listen to the testimony, it's 4 years in a row, you completely wipe it out. We're not even looking at alternatives for 5 years. So there seems to be a major inconsistency here.
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, and we've been working pretty hard on this. I have a lot of a disagreement with the testimony you just heard. First off, it doesn't benefit one business. Lutzen will cease to exist if you eliminate the ski hill. It involves businesses. It involves recreation from across the entire world comes to Lutzen Mountain to go skiing. So that, I don't agree. The testimony said it affects one business. Secondly, is they've been appropriating water from this Poplar River from this exact point for many years. And there are still trout in that stream. Secondly, is it's been a bit mischaracterized by the testifier that there is an abundant population of trout from the point of where they remove the water down to the lake, where there is an abundant trout. Because, members, this is on a hill, a big hill, a ski hill, where people downhill ski. The water is rapidly moving down the hill. The gradient is significant. Now, there are some trout that exist in that stream, but the vast majority of the trout are above the intake point, and the other vast majority of the trout are down at the bottom of the hill where it meets the lake, where the steelhead and the trout are. I'm not denying there are not some, but to characterize it as eliminating the entire trout population on the Papa River is a very dramatic statement. The barriers to this point are, of course, the cost, many millions and millions of dollars to get this built. Frankly, Senator Bach and I have been working on this for a few years, trying to find a way to get this done. Another barrier is the easements and getting easements across private property all the way down to the lake. Now, there is an easement apparently for the Superior National Golf Course, and that might be able to be used. We don't know the answer to that. Members, the Q90 is the circuit breaker that protects the trout. Nature takes it below the Q90, and if it freezes out, the trout are allegedly gone. Nature can do that without anything. If we're above the Q90, the ski hill will be able to take water out. If we're below the Q90, they won't be able to. But, I mean, the hand of God can take it below the Q90 every day of the winter. Lastly is that in terms of the permit shall be evaluated at the end of 5 years, I can tell you, Representative Wagenius, there is, now that this has come to a head, and the language in the Senate bill is much, much more lenient than the language that we have written in this. And I'm not saying that this is the perfect language, and I'd like to get this passed so that between now and the conference committee we can work on this. And all of us have been working together very well. Mr. Arnasty, Mr. Lunchesky, Mr. Tuma, the folks from the ski hill, the people from Lutzen, myself, have been working on this a lot. And we found a lot of agreement. And as with everything, we have a few minor sticking points. And so that is the reason that there is huge incentive to get this problem taken care of so that we never have to face this again, so the trout don't ever have to be in limbo at all, even though there are few on this steep hill because of the gradient, and then we get this issue put to bed. And so it may not be the perfect language to accomplish what you had suggested at this point, but if we can improve this language, I certainly am willing to do it. But there is going to be a huge incentive to get this taken care of. In fact, actually, Mr. Chairman, if I could, my idea is to not just have a ski hill appropriation. My idea in that community is to build a community water supply, because most places up there are on wells already. And I'd like to have a municipal water supply rather than people on wells. So that's my long-term vision for it.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I think it's, I appreciate Representative Dill talking about a long-term vision for the area and having a community water supply. Because that is probably a long-term solution. Has anybody looked at the beneficial reuse of any wastewater in the area?
Representative Dill?
I do not know the answer to that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, the reason I ask that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, is we put money in the clean water money 2 years ago, set aside money for just that purpose, for the reuse of wastewater, so that there would be enough money to finish it in a different way, so it would be usable for a different reason. And I think as a state, we have thought of ourselves as having abundant water and haven't thought about reuse the way other folks have thought about it. I don't think PCA took an aggressive stand in advertising that there was that money available. There may still be some of that money available.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just for some historical background, I'd like to know the flow of the river at this time of the year, I assume November, December, is it close to the Q90 mark? And if it would fall below that for 5 days, I would assume it wouldn't come back up again until spring. So how would that be handled?
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, first off, there will be monitoring by the department on the river. And it all has a lot to do with rain and with snowpack and with temperature. I mean, there's more flow when there's a lot of snow, like there has been this year, and there's a little higher ambient temperature. But again, at any time that it falls below, either from them using water or from nature using water, it falls below the Q90, the use will have to discontinue. And frankly, that's a threat to the ski hill in itself. We need to solve this, and we need to solve it as quickly as possible. Another thing that I talked about in the barriers is that today, as we sit here today, we don't have any design specs, we don't have any cost estimates. There's nothing at this very moment. I can assure you that there will be energy behind getting that done as soon as possible, regardless of whether this passes or not. I mean, we have to find a long-term solution. And as far as Ms. Chairman and Representative Wagenius's talk about the wastewater, that would be a grand idea, and that's the reason we need to have some type of a study done to determine what component, if any, of the overall need could be used from that source. I just don't know the answer to that, but any available supply would be good in this instance, other than the stream.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, I think you touched on one of my questions, which is what does happen when the hand of God comes down, and what does Lutzen do in that case?
Representative Dill.
They have to live with what they've got.
Representative Purcell.
And then just a comment following up on Representative Wagenius. There is a ski resort, I believe it's in the White Mountains of New Mexico or Arizona, that does exactly what she's talking about.
Thank you, Representative Purcell.
Thank you.
Members, I'd like to move an oral amendment along the lines of what Mr. Lincheski talked about.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a question.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, I'm sorry if I missed this, but do they currently take water out of the Poplar River? Does a ski resort, or is that not the case, or is this just modifying an existing permit? I'm sorry if I missed that.
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the answer is yes to that, and I think in the last 3 years they've taken out over 100 million gallons a year. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's 98 and 102 and 109 and things of that nature. And what was the second part of your question, Mr.
That was what it was, Representative Dill. But I guess the reason I wonder about this is I just thought that the snowfall in the past few years has been above average, and so I'm just curious as to why there is the need to take additional water, and we've had above average snowfalls, and I've been up to Lutzen in each of the last 3 years and haven't noticed a lack of snow, so I'm just, are they trying to expand the operation, or I'm just curious what the need is for.
Representative Dill.
Well, the answer is yes, and also as the other part of that question is they are, as you know, they've built a beautiful new chalet up there. You've probably seen that up on mm-hmm. the top of the mountain. They're preparing to put in a new high-speed lift, and the equipment that they're putting in is more efficient in making snow, so they'll be able to make more snow with less water, but they need to still make more snow when there's periods of time that there's less precipitation in terms of snowfall that hasn't yet melted, and they're using the run of the river, which obviously had to be above the Q90. But the point is that from time to time that ski hill doesn't have enough snow to really operate because of these changing factors, and they have to live with that. When it falls below the Q90, they have to live with that.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think we'll hear from the other testifiers before I do my oral amendment. Could you identify yourself for the record and who you represent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeremy Estenson with Leonard Street and Diner here on behalf of Lutzen Mountain Resort. We, too, appreciate the work that Representative Dill and Representative Bach are doing. I think we've heard kind of some of the history, but for 50 years, this segment of river, the 2 miles from the lake on up to the peak, is about a 1,000-foot vertical run from the lake. And as Representative Dill said, it's a turbulent place and doesn't provide a lot of habitat for fish to exist on a regular basis. Now, fish do move through there. They're transient. They've come over the falls and are getting beat up on their way down to to that last section of river by the lake at any given time. Of course, there's going to be some fish in there. The owner of the resort, Mr. Skinner, has mentioned from time to time that folks have gone and attempted to do some angling there without a lot of success. I believe the DNR has said that, you know, they do see fish move through there. So we're not here saying that there aren't fish, but as Representative Dill said, they aren't there to stay. They aren't putting up a mailbox, so to speak. Without snowmaking, I think this is an important thing, without snowmaking in the state of Minnesota, even though on a great snow year like this, and even on the North Shore with some lake effect snow, you don't have enough snow to operate a ski resort. And interestingly, Minnesota is in the top third tier of states with ski resorts in terms of skier visits. So it's a lively pastime here in the state. And further, Lutzen Mountain Resort is the top employer, is the first the biggest employer in Cook County and the number one draw for wintertime entertainment. So the need for the ability to know that there's going to be snowmaking, not only just in this five-year period, but ongoing, is very important for that business to stay afloat. And I'll just make one last point, Mr. Chair. Over the 50 years that Lutzen has been making snow out of the Poplar River, acquiring it where they're acquiring it now, there hasn't been any complaints made to Lutzen Resort about any changes to the status of the river or the status of the small fishery beyond Highway 61 onto the lake. I think it's about 150 or 200 yards where folks do some fishing.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Esteson? Members, I'd like to move an oral amendment on line 1.14, delete the word B, and on line 1.15, delete the word evaluated, substitute the word expire, and at the end of the word years, put in a period, delete the rest of line 1.15, and the one word in 1.16. It would now read, the permit shall expire at the end of 5 years. I know, Representative Dill, this isn't exactly what you'd like, but and Mr. Esteson, I respect where you're coming from, and you know I'm a big private sector person. I know this is different than the Senate has, and I will just tell you we will work as we go through conference committee on this issue, but I do have concern that I want to really push the envelope on getting it out of the lake. Representative Deal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I know I have a lot of respect for your work here as chair. I have to oppose the amendment because you heard the testimony that the ski hill is not functional without snow. I mean, made snow. Man-manufactured snow. And at the end of 5 years here, now this certainly puts an incentive into getting a public water supply, or not public, I'm sorry, a water supply from the public waters of Lake Superior. But what it doesn't do is give us any elbow room to say that landowners are, we need to use eminent domain to get to the lake, that there are engineering problems that need to be cured, that there is financing to be sought for this. That is a fairly short leash. And I particularly don't want to go into conference committee with this, with that piece in there, because it makes it difficult for us to work and find a solution, knowing that we have the this hammer on the whole process. And that's the reason that I believe it should be ongoing with a review. And so anyway, I think you know that's what I was going to say.
Well, I'm Representative Dill. I wouldn't be surprised if my amendment fails. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just respectively for the benefit of the trout, the benefit of the people who use the hill, and the benefit of the people and businesses in Cook County, will have to vote against the amendment.
I understand that. To the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion is not adopted. Members, to the A11014 amendment.
As amended.
Mr. As amended. Representative Hansen.
I'd ask for a roll call.
A roll call to the A11014 amendment. Roll call has been called for. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard? Dill?
Aye.
Drazkowski?
Aye.
Fabian?
Aye.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell?
Bad.
Quam?
Aye.
Scott? Torkelson?
Aye.
Wagenius?
No.
There being nine ayes, five nays, the amendment is adopted. Members, we are now on the bill, and we would be open to any discussion and or oral amendments. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to delete Section 75 on page 42.
Representative Hansen, could you explain the section you're deleting?
That would be the NPDES permit, the waters of the United States versus the waters of the state. I think we've discussed that before. Earlier, when we talked about the terrestrial application, I said that the amendment that was earlier passed moved part of the way, but this section, I think, is the onerous section, and I would seek to see it removed and would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. This is Representative Anderson's pesticide application bill. Clerk will call the roll. It's on deletion of Section 75, members.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Beard? Dill?
No.
Drazkowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
Pass.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hilty?
Yes.
Knuth?
Yes.
Purcell?
Yes.
Quam?
Yes.
What was he?
No. Yeah, it's German. Or, I mean, Russian for no.
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 Scott? Torkelson?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I was trying to think of the Russian for yes.
Yeah.
There being five ayes and nine nays, the amendment is not adopted to the 1097 as amended. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to make some oral amendments to sections. I'm looking at 24, 25, and 29 as I find my bearings here, Mr. Chair. for background members, we did have the Aquatic Invasive Species Bill before the Civil Law Committee, and there was an amendment there that was brought that would consider adapting the language that would allow law enforcement to basically pull over people who were on the road with their boat plugs in, regardless of whether they're coming to or going from the water access site. And we also had pieces to the amendment that removed the increases in fees that the agency brought, along with the decal that the agency brought as a requirement. And I would like to Mr. Chair, move an oral amendment if I could. That oral amendment, Mr. Chair, would be on section 24, lines 11.3, or line 11.32 on the end, so it'd be between equipment and the period, adding the words off the water access site or riparian property.
Excuse me, Representative Drazkowski, are you on the DE1? And then if you could give us the page and line you're on.
I am, Mr. Chair. I am on page 11. Line 32. So, Mr. Chair, the amendment would insert between the last word there on line 32, between equipment and the period, the words off the water access site or riparian area. It would be the same language as the new language on line 29 above it, Mr. Chair.
Otherwise, we're okay.
And I've got some other components of the same oral amendment, Mr. Chair. They're completely related. On line 14,
Representative Drazkowski, Ms. Taylor, could you read this part of Representative Drazkowski's oral amendment for us?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would read on line 11.32, after equipment, insert off the water access site or riparian area.
Property.
Property.
Property rather than area.
Riparian property. Representative Drazkowski, are the other ones related to this, or do you want to take this one first?
They're interrelated, Mr. Chair.
So go ahead, Representative Drazkowski.
The next part of the amendment, Mr. Chair, would be on page 12, the last line on page 12, line 35, striking the first comma, the words "or in proximity to locations," and striking the second comma.
Representative Drazkowski, continue.
The last portion of the amendment, Mr. Chair, would be on page 14, on line 19, at the very end of the line, inserting a period after the word "state." No, I'm sorry, my mistake. Not inserting a period after the word "state." No, it's striking at the end of line 19 the words "or when transporting," and then on line 20 striking "water-related equipment." So it would, the part that would be stricken would be "or when transporting water-related equipment."
Is that the end of your oral amendment, Representative Drazkowski?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Well, that's the most latitude I've given, Representative Drazkowski, but you did bring it to my attention.
And
members,
I appreciate it, Mr. Chair. I did just get the DE-1-2 amendment and finally got to it at 10 p.m. after all of my hearings and committee assignments.
Well, Representative Drazkowski, I pride myself on leaving late and coming early, and it's very rare your truck is not still in the ramp when I'm going by it. So I know how hard you work for your constituents. Members, Representative Drazkowski is moving a couple of items here that are very important to the bill. And Representative Drazkowski, as I know you brought this to my attention early this morning, I will not be supporting Representative Drazkowski's oral amendment. Mr. Meyer, to his oral amendment, do you have it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that last piece.
Mr. Meyer, it's on page 14, lines 19 and 20. Strikes the last four words of line 19 and the first three words of line 20. It removes "or when transporting water-related equipment." Mr. Meyer, if I'm not mistaken, this is one that's very troubling for me. I think of when I sold my boat lift up at the cabin. If I happened to live on Lake Ossawinamakee, throw my boat lift out in the front and put a for sale or free giveaway, as we often do up at the lake, and somebody all of a sudden it's gone. If I'm on Ossawinamakee and they go putting it in Lower Hay, that's not the kind of thing I want to encourage. Any additional comments, Mr.
Chairman,
Meyer?
Members, thank you for record, Bob Meyer, DNR. Thank you for those comments, Mr. Chair. I just want to refer members to page 7, section 16, which is the definition of water-related equipment. What we're talking about here is a motor vehicle, boat, watercraft, dock, boat lift, raft, like a swimming raft or something, vessel, trailer, tool, implement, device, or any other associated equipment that goes on. These are the vectors. This is what's moving the water around. The whole point of the AIS bill is to get people to leave the water where they're getting the water from. When it gets in their boat, they need to drain their boat. If you're moving a swim dock or a platform, you need to make sure it's cleaned and make sure that it's we have the ability to inspect those things here. Representative Drazkowski's oral amendment will weaken that authority and those opportunities we have to prevent these water-related equipment from moving around. With those changes to the bill, the AIS bill is essentially gutted for most part. We can't stop anything if we start picking apart at this stuff. So it's kind of an all-or-nothing thing. And Representative Drazkowski, I understand some of your constituents may have concerns, but the impacts to the state from this threat are huge, and I appreciate the chair's not supporting your amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Ask for a roll call.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I would just point out to members on page 11, we have on line 29, language actually that the DNR has placed into this, or whoever, it was the original author of the bill, placed into this off the water access site or riparian property for that clause in that subdivision.
is, I think, the right type of language. And so on the bottom of page 11 on line 32, would like to add that same language there. And members, what this amendment will do is it will allow law enforcement to cite somebody as they, if they don't have their plug out when they leave the riparian area, when they leave the boat landing, but it will not allow them to cite somebody when they are just simply out driving on the road or leaving from their garage after having their boat plug in their boat in hopes that their boat won't sink when they put it in the water. Mr. Chair and members, I have heard several stories of people who's ended up not placing their boat plugs in before they got out there, and we know what happens. So I think to not make this amendment will lead to destruction of property. It will place our citizens in a situation in which they can simply be pulled over because the boat plug is not in their boat, even though the boat may be completely drained, and they may have left and driven 10 or 20 or 100 miles with the boat plug free of the boat, out of the bilge of the boat, on their way out of the water area. So I think this is a sensible amendment that both protects the civil rights of people and still respects the intent of our of the bill itself. So I'd encourage your support.
Clerk, call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson? Beard?
Nay.
Dill?
Nay.
Rutkowski?
Yes.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell? Quam?
Aye.
Scott? Torkelson?
No.
Wiginius?
No.
There being four ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. To the bill. All those, Representative Jaskowski.
One more oral amendment, Mr. Chair, and that would be sections 37 and 38. I have to find the page number. Page 17, members. Members, this, and I did send around a handout that shows the complete section. This is section 93.0015. Members, it is obvious, and I did hear the testimony of Mr. Meyer last time I reviewed the testimony in the Senate. This is the Mineral Coordinating Committee, which they were unable to get somebody from the United Steelworkers to be part of this committee, so they expanded it to include anyone representing labor. I understand this is something that the agencies can do together to the extent they need or want to in order to coordinate their efforts around minerals. I believe this is actually a private function rather than a public function to be looking at mineral development. But also notice that this particular committee was set to expire on June 30th of 2011, and members, yet another committee that is supposed to sunset that the agency would like to write into law to extend it another 4 years. Members, I would move to delete sections 38 and 39. And insert on page 53, Mr. Chair, on line 31, after the semicolon way on the end, insert 93.0015 semicolon. And that would, members, repeal this committee that seems to be lacking in usefulness and needs to be sunsetted. Encourage your support.
Ms. Taylor, do you have the oral amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. It'd be on line or page 17, delete sections 38 and 39. And on page 53, I'd actually move the repealer to line 53.27 after subdivision 2B semicolon, insert 93.0015 semicolon.
Representative Hansen, to the amendment.
I'd ask for roll call.
Roll call has been requested. I'm opposed to the amendment. Clerk, call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson? Beard?
Nay.
Dill?
No.
Druskowski?
Yes.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Nay.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Yes or no?
Knuth?
No.
Purcell? Quam?
Aye.
Scott? Torkelson?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
There being three ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. All those in favor of the 1097 as amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The the bill is adopted. Members, tomorrow we have the legacy bill before us. We'll try and lay out the time frame. I believe we'll stay within our original committee time frame. But we'll keep it posted for where we're at. Any other questions? Members, we need to approve the minutes of April 27th. Representative Beard, to the minutes.
I move the minutes.
Discussion to the amendments. Minutes, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. The meeting's adjourned.